In June of 1992, we were looking for an essay for Father's Day. Our editor found a very good one in a collection called Sons on Fathers. The author was a reporter at New York Newsday then. We called him and put him on the air.
My father and I were college buddies back in the mid-70s. While I was in class at Columbia, my father was on a bricklayer's scaffold not far up the street, working on a campus building. Being the white-collar son of a blue-collar man means being the hinge on the door between two ways of life. Understanding doesn't come easily.
That was Alfred Lubrano's first appearance on Weekend Edition, and now he's one of our regular essayists. But that piece became a seed which has flowered into his new book, Limbo, Blue Collar Roots, White Collar Dreams. Alfred Lubrano is in the studios of WHYY in Philadelphia. What a pleasure to actually talk to you.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Why do you call the book Limbo?
People in this category, this sort of social class of transition, they're the first generation college graduates in their families, and they don't necessarily connect with the blue-collar world in which they live. They sort of find themselves questioning the orthodoxy as mom and pop preached it or as the corner boys talked about it. You know, they might have different ideas. They seem to enjoy books. They all report, at least the people I spoke with, report feeling out of place in the world in which they're born. But then they'll move on. They'll go to college. They'll go into some kind of job in a middle-class workplace, and they'll have made this journey. They'll have moved from the blue-collar world to the white-collar world. And in so doing, some of them feel like they've abandoned who they really were or who they're supposed to be. And so they feel like this journey is something of a bridge burning between what they were and what they are now. At the same time, they don't feel like they necessarily fit in among the middle class. They do see differences in the way people were brought up, in the way people look at the world. And in that measure of themselves, they find themselves no longer part of the past, but still in an uneasy present. And that's the limbo they find themselves in.
How hard of a decision was it for you to actually leave the neighborhood and go to college?
I was lucky because my parents pushed. They said, You got to go.
Hmm. There's such a paradox there because your dad is a bricklayer and a lot of blue-collar families, I think, want their children to be upwardly mobile, to get that degree and get that good job. But then there seems to be a gap in understanding about what that really means.
If parents are supportive of you going to college, and there's lots of parents who are not, that's another myth, parents sort of see college as a sort of crowbar that you'll use to pry money out of a corporation. They don't see how college acts on you in a different way, how college starts a metamorphosis in you, starts letting you think about different things. You think about your place in the world. You think about your obligation to society. You think about knowledge for knowledge's sake. These are all elements that are not really part of a working class world, which is very much concerned with the basics of life, you know, family, progeny, money, survival. The middle class world offers so many other things, and when you start to think about that, you start to move away from your family. Richard Rodriguez, who is a PBS commentator, mm-hmm. talks about that when he's with his Mexican American family. He talks about what he calls the shabbiness of his parents and how he, when he was young, he was ashamed of them in essence because of the way they looked, because they didn't understand his teachers, they didn't understand the books, they didn't understand the importance of it. He said it's an incredibly searing moment. It sears your soul to decide to talk like your teacher and not your father at some point. He says, I'm not talking about anything less than the grammar of the heart.
After you did your undergraduate and your graduate work, you actually were offered a job. Would you read, it's the passage that begins chapter 5. Would you read that for us, please?
Sure. In 1980, after college and graduate school, I was offered my first job on a now-dead daily paper in Columbus, Ohio. I broke the news in the kitchen, where all the family business is discussed. My mother wept as though it were Vietnam. My father had a few questions. Ohio? Where the hell is Ohio? I said it somewhere west of New York City that it was like Jersey, only more so. I told him I wanted to write, and these were the only people who'd take me. Why can't you get a good job that pays something, like in advertising in the city and write on the side? Advertising is lying, I said, smug and sanctimonious, ever the unctuous undergraduate. I want to tell the truth. The truth, My father exploded, his face reddening as it did when he was up 20 stories in high wind. What's the truth? Real life, real people. Writing about that makes me happy. No, you're happy with your family, he said, uttering a key blue-collar rule. That's what makes you happy. After that, it all comes down to dollars and cents. What gives you comfort besides your family? Money. Only money.
Was it only money that made your parents unhappy with your choice of career?
For the most part. I mean, they couldn't understand why I would spend all that time in school and just become a reporter, which paid a little bit more than construction work. Later on, my parents understood, but initially, it was a difficult idea to sell.
When you started working in the white-collar world of journalism, what were you not prepared for?
In the white-collar world, in the office, the race doesn't necessarily belong to the swift. You know, it has to do more with getting along. It has to do more with making alliances, connections, networking. For a lot of blue-collar people, the idea of networking is abominable. I mean, they don't understand it. You know, you make a friend because that's your friend, because there are things you have in common. You don't buddy up to someone just because they can help you. And so I had that problem too. I had another problem, which was that I never had an unexpressed thought. So if I thought a story assignment was stupid, I would say, you know, it's a stupid story, or why did you do that, or you know, that kind of stuff. And it was sort of that pugnacious blue collar stuff. And I mean, that does not play in a newsroom or in any kind of corporate setting. Nobody really wants to know what you think, even though if they ask you, what are you thinking? You don't tell them what you're thinking. I didn't know that.
You titled the last chapter in the book, Duality, the Never-Ending Struggle with Identity. When did you finally come to terms with who you are, your identity? How hard was that?
I don't know if I ever actually did. I mean, there are some people who tell you that you can pass for middle class, but you never belong. W.E.B. Du Bois used to talk about, for African Americans, a sense of two-ness, that you're in two worlds simultaneously, belonging to neither. I guess the best answer is to consider yourself to be bicultural. You are part of two different worlds, and you're just going to have to find a way to coexist with the two parts of yourself, to meld the two people that you are.
Alfred Lubrano, his new book is called Limbo, Blue Collar Roots, White Collar Dreams. He's a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer and a regular essayist on this program. What a pleasure to talk to you, Alfred. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.